Welcome to Peacemaking 101, episode 34 of Co-Creating Peace, a series about conscious communication and conflict transformation. I'm Kathleen Aouigon. Today, I have the pleasure of speaking with Victor Lacerva about peacemaking and emotional fluency. But first, the quote for today. Today's quote is by Gandhi. Be the change you want to see in the world. Victor Lacerva worked in violence prevention for more than 25 years. He remains engaged, although now retired, from his New Mexico Department of Health Family Health Medical Director position. He is the co-founder of the nonprofit New Mexico Men's Wellness, now 35 years strong, whose focus is to create a safe space for men to gather to share the joys and challenges of being masculine in today's world. Welcome, Victor. Thank you so much for joining us today.
It's my pleasure, Kathleen, to contribute to the fine work that you're doing.
Thank you. So I know that you've been involved in peacemaking for quite some time. What got you interested in the idea of peacemaking?
Well, I grew up in Brooklyn, New York, in a neighborhood that was on the edge of a ghetto. And although I felt safe growing up, just about everyone that I knew was held up at knife point at some point, had their bicycle stolen, was beaten up by the big guys. It was just a very violent culture. Additionally, in my large extended family, I have 23 first cousins, big Italian family. There was some domestic violence that was happening, and I remember the confusion of the adults, this is back in the 50s now, about how to deal with that. So I think those early experiences certainly planted the seed of thinking about there's got to be a better way. And then I did my medical training in New York City in Metropolitan Hospital, which covered 42nd Street to 125th Street, river to river. And there was a fair amount of violence that came through there. At one point, I was in charge of the pediatric emergency room with another colleague.
And so you had a very complex and volatile upbringing, it sounds like. And that sounds like that was a big contribution to what made you strive for a different, more peaceful way.
Yes, I think those early experiences, and then, as I said, I felt safe in my family, but there was this swirl of stuff that was happening around us. And then when I moved to New Mexico and started to get interested in public health, as opposed to just doing straight pediatrics, it became evident to me that New Mexico had lots of issues in terms of violence in the state, particularly when you compared it with nationally. So all of those were various seeds that led me onto a path of peacemaking.
And I'm also noticing as I'm listening to you that in your upbringing, there was a distinct contrast between the violence that you saw around you and the safety that you felt in your family. So you had an experience of a different way than what you saw in your outer environment. And that perhaps that was part of what inspired you as well to know that there was a different way.
Yeah, I think that's part of what made me resilient in the face of the adverse outer circumstances was because that home base felt very safe and supportive.
What a blessing to have that in the midst of all the rest. And I've heard you use the term emotional fluency. And can you help our audience and me understand what you mean by the term emotional fluency and how is that relevant to peacemaking?
Well, emotional fluency basically means that I have a clue about what I'm feeling inside, internally, and I have some skills in expressing it to others and the outer world in ways that are not harmful or destructive. So a story that comes to mind is I was going on a little rafting trip with some members of my men's group. And as we were loading up the boats and getting ready to go down the river, I saw this young man who was walking up and down the shore of the river, obviously very upset. And I went over and approached him and asked him what was going on. And he told me that a friend had drowned over the weekend. And I said, well, were you guys drinking or anything? And man, he barely had a six pack, you know, that kind of a mentality. So this young man was filled with anger,
which he was directing primarily at the state police, who had not yet been able to recover the body of his friend. But what was really going on for him was enormous grief at losing one of his buddies. And this is a typical pattern with men, where it's what's been termed the male emotional funnel, where men experience the full keyboard of human emotions, but because of cultural conditioning, tend to channel it and funnel it into the primary emotion that men are allowed to express, which is anger. So that would be an example of not being emotionally fluent. And his anger potentially could be very destructive to himself or to other people in his environment. And so there's a clear relationship to me between having a clue about what you're feeling inside and being able to express it in ways that are not hurtful or destructive to other human beings. There's a clear relationship between that and violent acting out behavior in our society.
Interesting. Yes, and as I was listening to you, I was thinking about how often we experience multiple emotions and perhaps from different areas, and yet it's hard for us sometimes to be able to sort out those emotions and understand where each of them comes from and then be able to express them in a way that other people feel safe hearing.
For sure, and I think that there's more of a gap from what you're experiencing to the consciousness of what you're experiencing in men. It just seems to be how we're wired, that sometimes in the face of strong emotions, we often will get triggered and rely on a default response such as anger, rather than tapping into what's really underneath and feeding that. I think part of that is just the conditioning that men get, just as women are often conditioned to not be able to express any anger. So we need to be creating human beings where, as I used to say when I was teaching parenting stuff, all feelings are okay, all behaviors are not. So it's fine for you to be mad at your sister, find another way of expressing it than hurting her or hitting her or destroying her drawing. But the basic fact that you're angry at your sister, that's okay. All feelings are okay. It's what we do with the energy generated by the feelings that determines whether we're acting skillfully and whether or not we're being emotionally fluent.
That all makes such great sense. And, you know, I remember from being a small child and watching my stepfather raise my brother and thinking to myself how grateful I was that I was born a woman, because I was allowed to cry. And I was watching my stepfather condition my brother to not cry. Men don't cry. And I thought, how can anybody go through life not being able to cry? And it wasn't until later as an adult that I recognized that, oh, as a woman, I'm not supposed to express anger. I'm only supposed to express loving, gentle, nurturing feelings, or I'm allowed to cry. And I find now, even still, with my own emotional fluency, that often when I am very angry, I cry first before I find a way to verbalize my anger. And so it's really interesting what cultural conditioning does to us and how we relate to one another and to the emotions we have and how to express them.
Sure. And it's clear to me that if you're incapable of shedding tears, you're likely to cause tears in another, because you don't understand and appreciate the whole complex brew of grieving, which is an essential human skill.
Yes, it is. And I love that thought and the way that you articulated it. The concept is so important for us to understand. And thank you for that.
And of course, all of that conditioning starts pretty early. So it's particularly important for parents to be mindful, as you pointed out with the story about your stepfather, about how we're allowing and encouraging the full range of emotional expression in our children. Again, making the distinction, all feelings are okay, but all behaviors are not.
Yes, and that is such an important distinction. Absolutely. A few minutes ago, you talked about your men's group and how you had gone rafting on the river. I know that you've been involved in the men's movement for quite a long time. How is the men's movement related to peacemaking?
Well, 35 years ago, myself and two colleagues at the Department of Health in New Mexico decided to put on a conference for men. And we got about, it was under 25 people. We did a weekend long thing. And at the end of that, I learned a lot. One of the things that I learned was the importance of emotional fluency and how men were hungry for the opportunity to sort of let their guard down and express some of the grief that they had about the circumstances in which they were raised, how they had failed as partners in relationships or as fathers. And so we had started out thinking we did dietary recall and exercise bicycle testing and a lot of sort of public health things, queries about smoking and alcohol and drug use and so on, all of which were important. But to me, what I got out of that first conference was we need to create a space for men where they can feel safe enough to be able to cry, to express some of this stuff that is being held in, and to allow voice to open the door for their own self-forgiveness. So to me, there's a clear relationship between men coming together on a regular basis in a support group or intermittently at conferences to explore together emotional fluency, to be able to look at their own violent patterns of behavior along a spectrum, of course, and then to learn some skills so that they can do something about changing them.
Interesting. And so through that, then I'm inferring that there is a more peaceful way that these men show up when they have that awareness and that emotional fluency, and they are less likely to express their anger in a way that is hurtful to others. Is that right?
Yeah. Over many, many years, we now have 7 events a year. We have one for each season. We have a couples event, and we've had father-daughter event as well as part of New Mexico Men's Wellness. And over the years, many, many partners have come up to me and said, thank you. Since my partner has been involved in men's wellness, they're better men. They're better dads. They're better partners. And I think part of that is getting to the core of trying to reverse some of the really destructive conditioning that men and boys get in our culture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, it's just recently I recognized that 3 of the finest men I know are part of your men's group. And I was not aware of that until just recently. And so I can say from my own observation of these 3 men that the work that you're doing is having a positive impact. I have no idea what these men were like before they were in your group, but who they are now are the kind of men that I admire greatly, each in a different way, but all because of the peaceful, thoughtful demeanor that they present and that I experience from them.
Well, it's not my group per se. It's a grassroots organization at this point that I help kind of get the ball rolling for. And New Mexico Men's Wellness is still happening after 35 years through the efforts of lots of people who step up to make certain things happen. But yeah, the primary focus all along has really been this notion of becoming more emotionally fluent, creating a safe space for men to share. I remember at the 2nd men's conference, there was an African-American man who stood up because we were talking about violence. And he said, you know, I'm a Vietnam vet and I've never been welcomed home. So we spontaneously created a welcoming home ceremony, which has now morphed over the many years from a veteran-specific ceremony to a more of a grief ceremony. So we just try to pay attention to what is it that can be most healing in this particular moment? How can we help men move through their past stories of violence, whether they were perpetrators or victims, to a more peaceful place?
You know, I wish everyone would ask themselves that question, what would be most healing in this moment? I think if people would do that, especially in their times of upset or when they're experiencing someone else's upset, if we would ask ourselves those questions, we could arrive at a peaceful place much more quickly.
Yeah. And I think that part of that is just like going to the gym, just like, you know, when we talk about meditation, giving you a certain amount of equanimity because you're observing your thoughts and feelings and not necessarily getting sucked into them or being triggered by them. But meditation only works when you exercise that muscle regularly. And the same thing is true with emotional fluency. So just the practice of checking in, how am I feeling right now? What is going on internally for me emotionally? Just that simple check-in question in the course of the day begins to get one to think about the reality of being more in touch with one's emotions, which then allows us in the moment to find a skillful way through whatever challenges we're experiencing. Another parenting thing that I always used with my own children was, what was the best part of your day? What was the worst part of your day, or the most challenging part of your day? And that's a great way to get at encouraging emotional fluency, because they have to think about, well, when did I feel really good? And when did I feel bad or have a difficult time? Another piece of this that I think I just want to mention quickly is that one of the insights that I got over the years was that rushing is a form of violence. And I know that it's a form of violence against myself because I'm much less centered and more likely to snap at somebody or get pissed at that driver that cut me off than when I'm not rushing. And it's also a form of violence towards other people when those things actually get expressed. I had two circumstances happen within a week of each other. This is probably 15 years ago, if not longer. I was at an intersection, and it was one of these intersections where it's difficult to make a left turn onto the traffic unless you know that there's a little safety lane before you have to merge into the main body of the traffic. And this woman was there, and I could see her looking both ways. And then I was rushing, and I honked my horn, and it only made the whole situation worse for her and for me, because then she took even longer to get across the lanes. And then in that same week, I was going to a conference, and I got in the cab, and the cab driver's on his cell phone. And I said in a really nasty voice, could you please do your job and take me where I need to go? There were so many other ways I could have been kind to him and treated that whole situation differently. But I was in a rush. And so I was off center and didn't have the skills that I like to normally think I have.
Those are both such great examples of how when we ourselves are off center, we do things that then put other people off center, and that can create a domino effect that we never really know the full extent of, and yet we ourselves, in our own lack of centeredness, were the cause of that domino effect to happen.
Exactly. And so I don't always succeed, but I certainly try and pay attention and be aware when I am getting into rush mode, and to just, you know, take that pause that refreshes, take a deep breath. You can use a gatha, that Buddhist practice of a grounding phrase, right here, right now. There's no need for me to be in a hurry. Even if there really is no need for me to be in a hurry right now. So those are important practices that I think keep us on the path.
Yes, indeed. And that ties very much into some of the things that I've talked about in previous podcasts, where I talk about stepping out of yourself for a moment into what I call the neutral observer mode, mm-hmm. where we, you know, look at the situation from a neutral perspective, and then we look inside of ourselves and we say, in this moment, I am. And then we identify what we're feeling in that moment, make a decision about how we want to feel and see and say, in this moment, I will. And so
that's a beautiful way of doing it. I like that a lot. And that eagle's eye perspective, of course, is also important because it gets me out of judging mind. It's so easy to, you know, be in a crowded airport and have somebody in the stewardess's face because the flight's been canceled or whatever. And for me to get into, oh, what an idiot, or some sort of judging mind. Whereas if I take the eagle eye perspective, I know that I've probably been there myself in the past. And so it's easier to get off and say to myself, just like me, this person is trying to avoid suffering and find happiness. Just like me.
Yes, indeed. And isn't that what we're all trying to do, is to end our own suffering and find happiness, and to be able to take that and also turn that outward and recognize that everyone else is in that exact same place. And maybe we can take a moment and give them that happiness that they're looking for, or at least not cause them more unhappiness.
Not to make it worse, yeah.
Right. Yes, exactly. And so what are the most important takeaways that you would like our listeners to leave this conversation with?
One of the takeaways that I think is important is a model that I used for many years when I was traveling across the country, primarily giving lectures about domestic violence and child abuse. And that is the idea of four concentric circles. So there's the circle of the self, the circle of the family, the circle of the community, and the circle of the larger culture. And there are lots of activities that we can engage in each of those circles to be actively pursuing a path of peacemaking. And so what I like to remind myself of is that when I get kind of burned out working in the large cultural circle or even some of the volunteer work or the men's wellness work and the community level, I can always drop back to the circle of the self. Am I doing what I can to be peaceful and content in this moment? So I think that that's an important frame for people to have, that when we get frustrated or burned out about trying to turn that bigger wheel on the cultural or community level, we hear about yet another school shooting or another case of racial injustice, it's very easy to feel demoralized and not empowered. We can always drop back to the circle closer to home, if you will, of ourselves and our family, and be mindful of what we're doing and not doing in those realms.
That's beautiful. What a gift to share that with us. Thank you. And thank you for all the wisdom that you have shared with us today. If our listeners would like to reach out to you and learn more about your work, how would they do that, Victor?
Well, the easiest way is to go to the website, which is myheartsongs.org, all one word, myheartsongs.org. And there's a place on there where there's a contact button so that if they send me an email, I'll get it. There's also a wide variety of publications. They can sign up for my weekly short podcast on various items that I consider to be important. I did a lot of coronavirus podcasts, but the current crop of podcasts are based on thinking about strength, flexibility, endurance, and balance, the primary things that promote physical fitness, and how we might apply those to the emotional realm and the spiritual realm. That's the current focus. So myheartsongs.org is the easiest way. I also offer a variety of publications that I put out over the years. The latest book was Letters to a Young Man in Search of Himself. And I do all of that by donation.
That is such a beautiful thing. Thank you, Victor, for all the gifts that you bring to the world and the gifts that you have brought to us today. I'm so very grateful. And I wish you all the best in your continued success in making a positive difference in the world.
Thank you so much. And it's a pleasure to support you in those same efforts.
Thank you.
If you have ideas for episodes of this podcast or specific things you'd like to learn about conscious communication and conflict transformation, please let me know. I want this show to have a direct and positive impact on your life. I look forward to hearing from you with your requests for advice about conscious communication or conflict transformation. I will honor whatever level of confidentiality you want in my response. I'm also happy to answer any questions you may have about anything I've shared with you. All you have to do is email me at owegon@bridgesofpeace.com. That's OWEEGON @bridgesofpeace.com. I will reply within 2 business days. You'll be able to hear a new episode of Co-Creating Peace every weekend. This episode of Co-Creating Peace has been brought to you by Bridges of Peace, providing mediation, facilitation, training, and communication coaching services throughout the U.S. and around the world. Learn more about Bridges of Peace by visiting www.bridgesofpeace.com. Thank you for listening, and may you always find new ways to co-create peace in your life.